Welcome to Biceps and Banter with expert trainer Brandon Crow. Hold on to your dumbbells and get ready for this conversational style podcast focused on interesting everyday dribble with tasty tidbits of health-related information sprinkled in. Enjoy.
Brandon.
Dave.
How's it going, man?
Good. How are you?
Come on in.
Good. Thank you. Oh, you got the Vibrams on and everything.
Ready to
look at you.
So what got you into podcasting?
I don't know. I think I just started listening to a lot of podcasts and I thought, you know what? If they can do it, I can do it. Why not, right?
Yeah. Expose a lot of stuff that people don't get exposure to.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's what I'm going for. And I want to keep it Toronto-based, mostly anyway for now. Mm-hmm. So I train out of a place called Harmony Fitness. It's kind of midtown Toronto, Forest Hill. They do a bunch of different classes, but the most popular one is the one I described to you, the half treadmill, half weights. Mm-hmm. We're also running one called Chiseled, which is only machines and dumbbells, no cardio or anything. A small group, it's like a small group personal training session. Mm-hmm. We get as many as like 15 people for the hour, and we run them through different exercises.
And so I guess the idea there is to get a clientele who wants to get the most done and as efficiently as possible,
yes.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
Put the stimulus on their muscles, get this adaptation they want, and I guess, what, 30 minutes, or does it go longer?
It's an hour, actually.
An hour, that's okay.
It's a lot of sets.
Yeah.
It's a lot of sets. I mean, they're...
I'd imagine the more they've done it, the more they pick it up and
exactly.
They're adapting yep. to it.
Exactly. So I do have a core group that has been pretty consistent every... Tuesday morning, and then I have one Wednesday morning, Thursday morning. So I see the same people week in and week out.
That's
and
good.
Then slowly but surely I'm seeing people they're remembering the cues.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Almost like I have to sometimes I'll just set my timer, okay, go. I'm looking around. Like barely anybody needs correcting because they've done it so many times.
That's where they want to it's where you want them to be.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And whether it's one on one or a group setting like that, it does usually take time, right?
For, yes, yes.
Get the control aspect
yeah.
of yeah, what they're doing. That's good.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
So then the people that have done it so many times, I don't have to focus on them as much. If new people come into the class, I'll spend a little bit more of my time with the new people. So they
yeah.
get it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you find people adapt pretty quick to the exercise. Like, it's like, oh, this... I mean, you're obviously making it harder all the time.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, you've... Because I find it hard in a group environment sometimes, right? Because you have
totally.
You might have a couple of individuals that have,
yeah.
maybe it's just a couple, but still yeah. they're kind of falling behind.
And yeah.
as we know, in the big picture, you need a lot of things on the outside of the exercise to adapt, right? So when they go home, what are they, you know, how's their sleep and stuff. So
yeah.
not everyone's coming with the same, you know, amount of juice yeah. or the ability to adapt, right?
Exactly.
So
that's exactly
that's it. A challenge with group stuff that yeah. I found, right?
Yeah.
Keeps you busy.
Keeps me busy.
Yeah. And that's the thing with exercise that I find so fulfilling is that, you know, teaching exercise and the like is personal training is that it's problem solving all the time, right? So it's you identify, you know, you're watching someone trying to control something that you've given them as a stimulus and you're cueing them as best you can. To because everyone has different kind of control issues, right? Like it's not always going to be the same thing, right? So if you get a whole group of individuals, their issues of doing a particular thing are going to be completely different, right? So you're always your mind is always in it, and it's the constant problem solving, right? It's not kind of the same old out of the can things that you need to keep doing, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I find it's like the more your mind is working, the easier it is, the easier the job is in a way, right? I mean, it's the more complex, you know, the more you can see, the more your involvement in it, right? Which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's definitely some mental gymnastics. And also trying to remember, okay, this client does things this way, this client has this injury, this client, you know, you have to almost remember to better serve them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Thankfully, I mean, I do one-on-one, like right now. And, I found that always a challenge with a group. So,
oh, yeah.
I'm just like, I'm going to stick to one-on-one.
One-on-one is amazing for that.
Yeah. It's a different dynamic, and it's one-on-one isn't for everyone, just like group training isn't for everyone, right? So definitely, if people are interested in training and they want a group dynamic, and I kind of chose from a business perspective and a, you know, worldview that I only do one-on-one. So, you know, those people aren't going to fit the mold if they see exercise differently. You know, it's all about what you want out of exercise. What what is your experience, right? So I'm sure for you, as well as myself, as you've got along in your career of exercise, you've changed your view of it, right? And and clients are going to be coming to you for different experiences, and they're not going to be the same same clients, right? I mean, you know, sometimes one-on-one boot camps are a typical client who goes to boot camp is one who wants to get trained. You know, they love the difficulty, they love the challenge, they love the exertion of it that they wouldn't get anywhere else. Maybe if, even if it was one-on-one, right? And they thrive on the group environment, which I think is a huge, you know, the motivational component and the accountability of a group, right? Yeah, I find that, so it's definitely a different dynamic.
Totally.
One-on-one versus group training, right?
Totally.
You know, I always say you can't out-exercise what you eat anyway. So, you know, for me in particular, I've decided not to take on people who whose goal is weight loss. You know, that could be a side effect of the exercise, but you know, you're always upfront about, you know, this is a big lifestyle change, right? I mean, you gotta keep track of, you know, what you eat and, you know, how your sleep is, and this is gonna, I mean, the thermodynamics of your system, the calories in, calories out, and obviously the quality of your food and your ability to recover from this exercise, right? So, yeah, it's interesting, you know, going a little further. With what people, you know, what trainers choose to give their clients is really based on their own experiences and what their background is. So the way the fitness industry is, you know, like me, I'm sure you got in this industry because you like exercise or maybe you were into sports. And you're like, you know what? I love this recreationally. Maybe I can do this as a profession. But what happens is, you know, we get this responsibility of, you know, prescribing in a sense exercise, but we're only limited to our previous experience, right? So if my background is gymnastics, for example, or for me it's bodybuilding, right? So if I wish to be a gymnast, then all I know is gymnastic exercises. So if I have a 400 pound client, you know, I don't know anything outside of my gymnastics exercise, and it doesn't matter how appropriate it is to the individual. And that's kind of really, you know, when there's no real governing body or no oversight with, you know, I mean, there's certain certifications out there that kind of give you a very, very basic understanding of stuff. It's not, they're not even real fundamentals, but, you know, they just try to lower the risk a little bit. But as a trainer, when you're certified in those things, you still kind of stick to to what it is you know. If you're if you're a former Olympic sprinter, you're going to give your 400 pound guy sprinting exercise that you did in training, right? So we all have the responsibility. I fall in the same, you know, as a bodybuilder, I used to just give bodybuilding exercises when I was a trainer, and you know, and then you have yoga and you have all these other brands of exercise. But you know what we kind of forget as trainers is essentially we got to get out of our box, right? Where we came from, and look at personal training is really personal. Right. So it's, can we exit our box, our framework where we came from, and say, this individual that I have is different from this one. And therefore the exercises or nothing should be the same. Right. And the better we get at looking, you know, this happens with time and experience, right? The better we get at observing and collecting data, the better we can make decisions and how, and, you know, exercise decisions that help the client, get better, right? Whether that's strength or stability, flexibility, right? So yeah, you made a good point, right? It's like, you know, you're you know, do you as a client of a trainer, do you want something built for you, or do you want that what the last guy had with that trainer, right? And that's typically what you'll see in a gym, and it's no fault of any trainer. I mean, this is, we just do what we know. Essentially, we fall in love with exercise, and we exercises, certain ones we like, and we condemn others because maybe we don't understand the whole spectrum. Yeah. And so we go, you know, we can go from client to client kind of on automatic mode, thinking, oh, this exercise, you know, this, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. the same exercises, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's kind of interesting.
It's amazing, and you really have to have an open mind and not be attached to any particular exercise or...
it's tough, man.
It's tough.
You know, what is their goal? Is it this experience that they love that they've had in the past? And that might be it. Or it might be, you know, I want to be stronger. I want to be able to bend over and not have my back hurt, right? So maybe in that case where there's this, you know, pain or mechanical limitation that they have, it might be a little bit easier to convince them, to have them be convinced, like, okay, all this exercise that I used to love, maybe it's not for me, and there needs to be an intervention. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do something else. But so maybe we can go back to that, you know, we can raise someone's tolerance to stuff they've been doing in the past that we might not consider quote unquote good for them. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So building up someone's capacity to do anything physical and not, you know, maybe a lot of people, older people, they want to play sports again. Right. And, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Golf can be, for example, can be tough on the body, but not everyone, especially in your 40s and 50s and 60s, people that play golf, sometimes they don't have this tolerance anymore like they were when they're younger. And so the exercises that they used to do when they were younger, when they are exercising for golf, they can't tolerate it anymore. So it's a matter of this educating the consumer about, yeah, maybe we have to back up on this. We can make this challenging, but kind of in this way, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And from my experience, you know, the more you actually believe in that as a trainer, the more it comes through to them and they start to see, oh, I actually enjoy this as well, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So some people don't enjoy, or people can't think of enjoying what they've never experienced too, which is crazy, mm-hmm. right? So, yeah. Yeah, not all types of exercises for everyone.
So I do have a client fairly recently. I've been training her for maybe last year. Mm-hmm. Her goal is maybe 10 or 15 pounds of weight loss. Mm-hmm. That's like her main goal. So when she comes into the training session, she'll say, I don't want to bulk up my upper body. So if you want to do exercise, let's only do lower body, maybe some abs. I'm not doing any upper body. And I'll sneak in some upper body here and there. And when she's doing a bicep curl and she's complaining, oh, look how big my biceps are. They're bigger than yours. And like, she's in the mindset of lifting weights is going to get her bulky, right?
Oh yeah. These myths that you have to keep contending with the average consumer, right? Mm-hmm. It's funny one. Cause I get that. And it's, I mean, you can't blame some consumers because they don't get, this kind of upfront time with real experts. Again, it's this kind of brainwashing with the media and stuff. But you know, it's funny. I've had people come into my office and they would state their goals and, you know, I want to put some muscle on, but I don't want to look like you though. And they go, oh, thank you. And I don't know if that's a compliment, right? And right, and just kind of this like ignorance in a sense that, like, you know, it takes a lot of heart. If you do a few sets of upper body, right? I mean, you're not going to wake up tomorrow. I'm like, shouldn't have done that yesterday. I'm that much bigger, right? Yeah. So it's almost like, and you've probably experienced this with the consumer, is that results, because of advertising stuff, results seem like they can be easy if you've never experienced it. And it's like, no, I don't want to work upper body. You know, I'm going to get too big. Whatever secret you have, please tell me. You know what I mean?
That's exactly it. When somebody approaches me and says, you know, I don't want to get too bulky, I'll say, I've been trying for 10 years to get bulky, and this is as big as I've gotten.
That's funny. I've used that one a lot. Yeah. It's like, I think it's humbling when someone who starts exercise, you know, they're like, oh, okay, I'm not, you know, especially if they're female, you know, they don't have the particular capacity generally to put on muscle, and they're the ones who are most scared of it.
Yeah.
Right. And they find, oh, I'm actually getting tighter here. And, you know, it's, you know, my muscles are getting more toned, as they would call it, and, mm-hmm. and not really, I'm not getting bulky, and this is helping my fat loss, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a girl that comes to my chisel class. She's been coming for maybe last 3 months straight, and I remember where she started and where she is now 3 months later, and it's amazing to see. She came in just like real thin, and yeah. now she's starting to slowly put on a little bits of muscles, and you're starting to see it in the definition in the shoulders coming in, definition in the backs coming in.
Yeah.
Amazing to see.
Yeah.
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 And that's the type of stuff that gets me pretty fired up and excited.
Yeah. Changing people's lives, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. When they're, you know, when they're committed to the process, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've had people who, as I have, you know, through training, it's like, especially if someone's new, they don't know what type of commitment it takes to get that far, because it doesn't, mm-hmm. again, it doesn't happen overnight. And some mm-hmm. people think it does, mm-hmm. right? And they're actually scared of it happening overnight, mm-hmm. which is insane to us, people who've been exercising for a while, right?
Yeah.
All right, ready for a walk.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about how you got started. So you're obviously, you mentioned you're an athlete, previous, mm-hmm. like
yeah.
your teenage years. So where did that start?
Yeah, so I played just, you know, basketball in high school. And when I, you know, I started working out for basketball, and when I realized I wasn't going to be 6'8" to do anything with it, I kind of just fell into the exercise part, and just kind of got into bodybuilding. Was kind of, mm-hmm. You know, addicted to putting on muscle, and for that time, for narcissistic reasons, of course, right?
Exactly.
And and it went from there, and I kind of got interested in the whole personal training aspect, and how I actually worked at a gym when I was 17 or 18, and I was just intrigued by how other people train, how you know, different trainers are training. And one individual at this place I was working at, he was training a lot differently. So I got in. So I asked him, you know, where'd you get your training education? And I kind of followed a path which led me to where I am now, which was basically I started studying exercise mechanics while I was in university on the side. So I took kinesiology at York University, and started traveling all around the United States to go into courses and really getting into the study of exercise mechanics. Yeah,
that's amazing. I actually started started with basketball, then to make my junior team. It was a really competitive team, so I thought, okay, I need to go to the gym, lift some weights, put on some muscle. So that's where I started, and then it's just started with every summer I would work out, and then during the school year not work out. And then I got more into it when I got to university. I studied biological sciences, and then after that went on to nuclear medicine.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's a course at U of T,
okay.
And they're partnered with the Missioner. I took that, so that's 3 more years of schooling. But on the side, I was always doing personal training,
mm-hmm.
a little bit, just with either students or faculty members or friends of faculty members, just kind of doing part-time on the side.
Yeah.
I finished up my schooling. I did 8 months placement at a hospital, and realized I didn't want to work at the hospital the rest of my life.
Is that right? It's not an environment that...
No.
What was it about it? Was it like kind of the energy?
The energy, right? You know, people will go in there not in optimal health.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really getting down at the root cause of things, right? So I realized I wanted to help people. I just wanted to help them before they got to the point where they needed to go like to the hospital, right? So I continued to do personal training. I was doing personal training that time at Good Life, where I met a client, started training her. She lost 60 pounds. She knew I wanted to open up a studio, so I went into partnership with her.
Mm-hmm.
Was there for a couple years, and then, like I said, I floated around for a couple years, and then started working with Harmony Fitness.
Okay,
yeah.
Right.
So that's
on, yeah.
That's like my whole bio, I guess.
It's funny, right? It's all these people involved in exercise in their career now kind of have a similar path, but kind of we go roundabout ways to getting where we are. You know, definitely started exercising when we were, you know, through sports. That's very common, right? And we get into it. But yeah, so...
How long have you been RTS? You mentioned you've been 12 years in the entire industry.
Yeah.
From personal training onward.
Yeah, I think it's been maybe a little more than 12 years, but I was certified. I got certified in mastery level RTS in 2008, I believe. And yeah, so RTS, for those who don't know, is, I'm sure, are you familiar with?
Yes.
Yeah, so Ben's. Ed Pikulski, who you've talked to, he's been there.
Yeah. So maybe for the listeners, kind of talk about RTS. What is it? You know, yeah. How you got involved with them.
Yeah. So RTS is really a resistance training specialist program. It breaks down exercise into its fundamental parts in regards to physics and exercise mechanics. So the understanding of force, you know, joint structure in the body. So fundamentally breaking down exercises into the smallest pieces so you get a fundamental understanding. So for example, when someone does a squat, when two people do a squat and we call it squat, and they, you know, they, you can instruct them to do it the same way, typically it's going to be a different stimulus. And so RTS really gets you to understand, you know, what are the forces, what are the mechanics going on that make exercise different, unexercised or exercise different for every individual. And I think, you know, exercise mechanics is the missing piece in exercise education. You know, so I did kinesiology, or in other words, exercise science at York University. And the physical education programs, these kinesiology programs, these exercise science programs in university are very outdated. I mean, I found that out studying RTS at the same time, where the kind of these institutions have education that's literally 50 years old. So when you're studying biomechanics, you know, you're doing trigonometry equations, but you know, you can graduate from these programs and not know how to give someone an exercise. There's nothing really applicable to it. So, yeah, I mean, exercise education now is fundamentally biased towards exercise physiology, right? So, you know, how many reps, how many sets, what's the rest time, lactic acid threshold, and all this stuff. But no one, not many exercise programs talk about the fundamentals of the physics, the stimulus, right? What is force? How is, you know, this dumbbell curl different from this one? And that impacts the physiology. Mm-hmm. So you can't, you know, you can't study or know someone's, or know the physiological impact of exercise truly until you know the, you know, the, you know, the understanding, you have this understanding of what the actual stimulus is, which is force.
Right.
So I think that's why, you know, RTS and the study of exercise mechanics is so important. And it really changes, you know, your client's experience and opens up a whole new level of exploration to exercise.
Exactly. And once the client starts to understand force, and the idea is not to make the exercise easy just to perform a rep, the idea is actually to make the exercise as difficult as possible.
Yeah, yeah,
keeping
absolutely.
Challenging the muscle as much as possible.
Yeah, yeah, exercise is challenge, right? So that's kind of the definition, is physical exercise is a physical exertion that's essentially appropriate enough to stimulate change, right? So what do we see when we go to the gym and we see people exercise? Well, they're always avoiding challenge, right? So it's this, you know, cheating and let's get 12 reps, right? So my question is, what is a rep? Why are we aiming for 15 reps? If, you know, it's not 15 reps, it's actually a lot of the times 15 sets of one rep of 15 different exercises, right? So, you know, how precise can we be with our execution? Does that make sense? So if we've outlined what an exercise should look like,
right,
and we're doing rep by rep, are we controlling all the aspects to, again, fatigue, to challenge what we want to challenge, right? Yeah, so this whole control component is a big part of getting someone to be challenged to exert fatigue on whatever they want fatigued, right?
Yeah. So not an arbitrary number of reps. Maybe look at the exercise as a rep, one rep. Like you're trying to control the entire.
Yeah, yeah. So if your seventh rep looks a lot different than the first, then what's the point?
Right.
Right? Because if your goal from the first rep was, I want to challenge these specific tissues and create an adaptation. Let's say you're working your lats, for example.
Yeah.
And by the time you've gotten to the seventh rep, you've lost the control necessary for your goal, which was at the beginning of the set. And the reason for that a lot of times is because you're aiming for a number. So oftentimes I never count reps with my clients. Because how do you know how many reps someone can get? You don't know. It's in the future, right? So
right.
What if someone, you know, doing the challenge optimally, because that's what we were just talking about, is the whole point of exercise is challenge, appropriate challenge. If they can only get 11, why are we asking them to do 15? But we don't know if they can do 11. They have to do it first. Does that make sense?
Right, right. And then you're watching to see how their body's breaking down and how tempo is changing, how the form and execution is changing. And once those things change, that's the end of the set.
Correct, yeah. Okay. So it's like when you start an exercise, you create these conditions, and these conditions are specific to what you're looking for in the outcome, what you want out of the outcome of the exercise. So you want to be very precise as a trainer, in my mind, as to, you know, watching the execution, be very observant and seeing where they need to improve, right? And not have them allow stray from the original conditions, mm-hmm. right?
You don't count reps.
No. So,
but will you pick a weight, say, for instance, to challenge them somewhere around a rep range?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, definitely there could be a rep range, right? So, typically, let's say, for example, in my head, I want someone to do 12 repetitions, right? Mm-hmm. What I tell them is, you know, look, if we're not really going to count, but if it's around 8, we're good. If it's around 13, we're good.
Right.
You know, let's focus on speed and tempo, because remember, reps, we forget, is just a function of time, right? So, you know, when we look at programs online, it says 12 reps, but it doesn't specify the tempo, which is really the time under tension, the length of the set, and people are chasing reps and not looking at, oh, how much time, and if you're not spent, typically, if you don't have skill in any motion, I mean, you're going to be uncontrolled aiming for a particular number.
Totally. Right? Like, did you do those 12 reps in 12 seconds, or did it take you 40, 50 seconds, time under tension?
Yeah.
And you see that all the time in the gym. Even I'll see that sometimes in my classes. I'll specify, okay, you're going for around 10 to 15 reps.
Yeah.
Start my timer, go. Look in 10 seconds in. Somebody's already completed their entire set, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Just trying to get it through it as fast as possible.
That's it, right? The number of reps don't matter. And so there's all these other variables in exercise. So particularly in mechanics, when you look at, it's more than just reps, right? So, and then when you talk of time under tension, we also have to be aware of, you know, when we do a rep, Is the amount of tension the same throughout the entire rep? And the answer is not typically, right? So, you know, when you're doing a bicep curl, the bottom of the rep is not gonna be nearly as much tension, well, with a dumbbell, as the middle, right? And so how much time are you spending at each point? How fast are you moving the weight? Mm-hmm. Because now there's gonna be inertial properties of the resistance you're moving, right? So we see people swinging at a, you know, dumbbell curl, and why is it, why do they do that, right? Because we wanna break the inertia of the dumbbell, of the weight, where it's easiest, which is going to be the bottom, where there's a smaller moment arm of resistance. So if someone does 15 dumbbell curls, and they're again now not accounting for inertia, and, you know, of course the way they're doing it, then, you know, once you look at mechanics, you start to see the number on the weight doesn't mean anything, or it means very little, right? Because there's all these other you know, components in physics that we can begin to understand and really extrapolate from exercise, right?
Yeah,
you know what? I think that's, from my understanding, I mean, from my experience, that seems just to be human nature. We're kind of, obviously our lizard brain wants to make things easy all the time. That's kind of our prime directive as humans, but we're essentially always focused on external performance, right? So what is the number? What is the time? We use these as gauges to give us an idea how well we're doing. Whereas on the other side of the spectrum, we have internal performance, which is essentially how are we working internally? What's being used? Where is our focus? Right, so sports, for example, on one end is very externally performance. Does the puck go into the net, right? Does the ball go into the hoop, right? So that's where we focus. But I find, through my experience with looking at mechanics and focus on getting people to focus on the inside, is have people focus on the inside first, get them to feel contractions, get them used to the feeling of using their body, and not have them focus on how many reps, how much weight. You know, to give you a simple example, that we'll use basketball. I mean, we both played basketball. So, you know, when you were young, you were taught essentially almost an internal performance aspect to focus on, you know, your elbow, your shooting motion, and the flick of your wrist, and the timing with the jump. And, you know, you were practicing this on your own. It wasn't in a game, so you could focus on the internal. When you get into game time, hopefully you've focused on the internal, that it's kind of your external performance gets better because it kind of meshes into one, right? So, I think it's very important to see this as a spectrum. So I think where exercise is now, where it resides, is this external performance idea, like where we're tied to the amount of reps and how much more can we do. Where I think definitely as a beginner, if you're having on beginners on exercises, you have them feel stuff, be mindful of the control and the motion and how much time it's taking for a rep and where they're squeezing. And then if they feel like it, or if that's the direction you want to take them, given, you know, their objectives and how much they can tolerate, then you can have them push hard and they won't lose their form, similar to a jump shot in basketball, right? Where everything becomes, the internal performance becomes automatic and you don't have to think about it, but it does improve your external performance later on, right?
What do they call that? The conscience competence, where you can do it automatically.
That's right. Yeah. But I, you know, exercise is supposed to be about health, not about the outcomes, right? The external outcomes, right? Because the external outcomes are for sports, right? And it's what CrossFit is, essentially. They call it the sport of exercise, which to me is kind of like a misnomer, right? It's like, you know, exercise is not sports and sports aren't exercise, in a sense that, you know, sports is activity, but it's not for a specific goal. It's to score points to win the game, mm-hmm. so to speak, or beat a record. Whereas exercise is about appropriateness and some sort of change that you want from your body. So definitely I like the idea of this internal external performance perspective, right? And that really, you know, when you get someone accustomed to feeling the inside, they start to disconnect from, they start to really understand that, you know, the amount of weight that they're using really means nothing, right? It's just kind of some arbitrary gauge, which, you know, goes along with ego, and everyone wants to, you know, push more, and it makes them feel better when they see a bigger number,
right? Yeah, exactly. When I'm working with my clients, 1 week we might use 50 pounds for an exercise, and then I'll see them the week later, and we might move down to 40 or 45, and they're thinking, well, last week I was at 50, why'd you put me at 45 or 40? Say, well, on this particular day, it doesn't look like you can handle 50.
Yeah, it's something, you strayed from the conditions and the boundaries that we set for the exercise, right? So, yeah, so if someone is, you know, they have to get a certain amount of reps, or I've done this 50, I need to do it. I mean, if they don't, they truly don't have it, they're going to figure out a way to do it, And it's up to us as trainers to be very aware and observant about these things, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, getting back to exercise is kind of a health thing. If we look at exercise as an external performance thing all the time, what do you think is going to happen to the body over time? Because if we're looking constantly to keep increasing weight and increasing our performance faster than what the body will allow, and this is where these kind of, I'll call them injuries, but this is where the costs of exercise come in. Now, I don't call them, I'm hesitant when I call them injuries, because, you know, we see people exercising inappropriately, you know, like at the gym, we just see them, you know, not doing good form, and oftentimes the risks and costs of exercise, they're insidious, right? So you don't see them, and it's actually a shame, because you know, if more people got acutely injured, people would be more careful. Like if people just all of a sudden tore something when they weren't doing something. But that's typically not the case when it comes to injury in a gym. Where the actual costs happen is, they're very insidious. They happen over time. If you did a poll, I've done this, you know, you go to a big commercial gym and you just start asking people, let's say men in their 40s who seem to be extremely fit, you know, they've been working out for 20 years, and you get asking them, how do you feel, you know? And what they'll tell you is, as good a shape as they look, they'll tell you that, oh, you know, my back hurts, and I can't run anymore because this knee thing, right? And I've had arthroscopy. And you start seeing like this mechanical system, which they reside in, that's their body. It breaks down just like a car. So if you race your car, if you have a, let's say, call it a Toyota Corolla, not meant for racing, but you take it to the racetrack year after year after year, and you're not looking into those components inside the car, you know, the engine's the way it is, it's wearing down, the car won't last. And a lot of people are, you know, they've been exercising really hard for a long time, and they're driving beat up Corollas in their body, right?
Yeah.
And so if that's the case, you kind of have to look internally inside the car, your own body, and say, let's look at exercise internally to make things better, rather than track it all the time. And if we, right, rather than take it to the racetrack and really beat it up.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how I see exercise in the body is, I want people to be internally focused before externally.
Yeah.
Right?
And the younger you can educate people on that process, the better they're going to be long term.
Absolutely.
Because you might pull that same 40-year-old man, and if he's been doing things right since he was 20, he won't have those same, you know, back injuries, knee injuries, elbow injuries, and
yeah, absolutely. And you know, once the wear and tear has happened on these, I mean, cartilage, it either doesn't come back or it takes a long time, right? So once your connective tissues have kind of gone on you, it's really hard to, so yeah, absolutely, it's right to, it's best to get it at a young age so you can, you know, preserve your material continuum in your system, right?
Yeah.
So when some people, you know, they've been exercising, whether they have been exercising or not, and they're reporting pain in some part of their body, they can't, most people, they can't, unless you pulled it or you did something acutely, it's kind of like this chronic thing that they can't identify where it came from. And that's the insidious effect of exercises. Let's say you've been doing some squats and compensating and haven't been doing within some constraints of the, you know, the way you should be doing it optimally. Well, what happens is tissues, certain tissues in your body are going to be start getting overstressed, and your motor control system, so the, you know, the sensory, the proprioception coming from your periphery to back to the central nervous system, and your central nervous system firing, you know, motor units to the muscles, this starts shifting, right? It's so your body's going to always try to find solutions, which is compensation, if some things aren't working properly, if some things are too stressed. And over time, it's kind of like a cancer. It starts spreading and spreading and spreading. And before you know it, you got maybe a tendon that's inflamed and it's tendonitis, or you got some cartilage worn out because your knee's been diving in and your muscular system hasn't been able to stabilize it appropriately because you've stressed out the joint, right? So yeah, this is the cost of exercise that people need to be aware of, right? You live in a mechanical body that gets that's really gets really warmed out, and you got to take care of it, right?
Yeah.
So, as a muscular system specialist, what I'm, it's basically looking from an exercise perspective. The tool is exercise. Is kind of a different perspective, is isolated versus integrated, right? So we know there's a big thing in exercise now, functional exercise, where I know it's called a marketing term, I guess, functional exercise, where everything seems to be integrated. The more joints that are working, the better, the more functional, the more lifelike it is, and therefore the better it is for you. But I kind of see things as integration is really the link of all these isolated parts. And so the integration can only be as good as the pieces of the integration, right?
Yeah.
So what we're able to do in exercise now is find the isolated pieces that need work before you put the integration together, right? So if you're doing a squat, which involves all these muscles, all these joints, and maybe you're not symmetrical on any one of those joints, or you've lost some motor control because of a stress, trauma, injury, overuse to any muscles. Essentially, it's whenever you do a squat, it's not going to be appropriate. Some other tissues are going to be working more than others. Mm-hmm. And again, that kind of spreads through your system. But so functional training can actually make people less functional. And typically it does, because you're trying to work an integration that can't possibly work optimally because all the little pieces haven't been looked at.
Yeah.
Right.
What's the point of doing a squat on a BOSU ball when you can't do a proper squat on the floor, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it goes that far, right? That's exactly right. And a lot of people can't even do a proper squat. Or I should say most optimal, right? Mm-hmm. So if they're already compensating, and let's say, you know, you're missing some ankle motion on your left side, you know, maybe you'd sprained it, you know, when you were, you know, 12 years old, and now you're 30 and you're missing motion on that left side, and your squat starts breaking down because of one little piece. But the whole time we've been kind of told, oh, these multi-joint, you know, motions are so much better, right? And it's going to make you stronger to, you know, strengthen the whole thing, when really maybe one piece of your body needs more care, and it might not be symmetrical, right? So as a muscle system specialist, and try to look at what parts of your body, what muscles, what joints have lost motor control, have lost the communication, and restore those with what I call exercise with a scalpel, very precise, and we're able to qualify motor control to you know, measure it to see that it's better qualitatively. And what we do see is when muscles fire better, the joint moves better, and when you start doing integrated exercise, it looks completely different and it feels different and the stimulus is different. So mm-hmm. we can't count, you know, when we do functional exercise, we can't count on everything working the same or optimally. And that's, you know, that's the trend I see in exercise is, you know, bigger is better. And it's just not the case. So, you know, looking at exercise through this glass of, you know, through this window of, is everything working the way it should? And can we choose exercises appropriately to make your body function better as a whole?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what works for one person is not going to work for another.
Never.
Never. Yeah.
Right.
That's what makes it fun.
Yeah.
It's almost like a personal training detective. You have to find out, you know, the backstory, and you have to be very observant.
Yeah. And even just choosing things, you know, checking out motion and saying, you know, we can get into this topic of stretching versus not, you know, this range of motion. You know, why is your right side different from your left, right? And it might not be as simple as this muscle needs to be stretched. But muscles typically don't stretch, right? I mean, they're connective tissues that don't have much give, and what allows them to lengthen is really the nervous system allowing tension or not having tension.
And, right.
If the nervous system chooses to make something tighter than maybe what we want, there might be a reason for that.
Yeah.
Generally, that's stability.
Yeah,
right?
It's like a protective mechanism. I've heard Greg Roscoff.
Yes.
He'll say, when you step on a sheet of ice, mm-hmm. what happens? Your entire body tenses up.
Yep.
And is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So when we're on an unstable surface, when we're walking on ice, the body will choose less mobility in the favor of stability because the conditions are making it so, oh, well, we're on we need stability. We can't move.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example of the entire system, but it's also happening on a joint by joint basis. So if you've lost motor control in a certain range of motion in your body, well, certain muscles are going to tighten up to not allow you where you don't have control, right? So if we choose to stretch and do flexibility training, we could be making ourselves vulnerable to injury because we're opening up range of motion that otherwise your body, your brain did not want to allow,
mm-hmm.
right? So in my experience, I mean, the people who've had the most pain and instability are gymnasts, figure skaters, mm-hmm. dancers, those who were stretching for more and more range, and really stretching being a negotiation of the nervous system to loosen up tissue. Well, they've opened up their ranges to the point where the brain is not communicating active motion in those areas, right? So I don't, as a muscle system specialist, I don't really care that you can bring your, you know, you can lift your knee to your face standing up with your arm. I want to know, can you do that under your own control, right? Can you, can your brain do that
right.
by itself?
Right.
Right?
So one thing I've seen Ben do with a squat is he'll have the person stand upright, and then they'll bring their knee as high as they can to their chest,
mm-hmm.
Basically showing them that that's what you can control actively without any load. So when you go into the squat, remember that range, because anything else, it's just pushing you into a position you shouldn't be in.
Yes.
Yeah.
So measure, you know, when you're doing any exercise, you want to measure actively at each joint. Let's say in a squat, you want to measure how much can I move my ankle and dorsiflexion? How much can I lift my leg up from my hip, right? So those are two motions you want to look at in a squat, and you don't want to go passively into those motions because the resistance, the bar, and the body weight is taking you there, right? So you don't want to visit these vulnerable ranges that you don't have control over. So yeah, he's right. And as far as finding your active motion, and that's mm-hmm. that's really the window that you want to be exercising in. Mm-hmm. You know, not doing, you know, chest flies on a machine and setting the machine to all the stretch, and you try to get as much motion as possible, because that's another thing in the industry that's been kind of pushed down our throats, right? Is essentially full range of motion. Full range of what motion?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Your passive motion or your active, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's
I was having this conversation with another trainer at the gym because I had been telling certain clients, okay, at the top of a chest press, you don't need to touch the dumbbells together. And yeah. And then he said to me, well, can you show me how you do a chest press? So I showed him how I do a chest press, mm-hmm. not with the dumbbells touching. He says, well, that's not a full range of motion.
Yeah.
And I said, well, a full range of motion for what? Like, what are you trying to challenge in this exercise? Yeah. For this particular exercise, I want to keep my chest under tension the entire time, so I'm not holding out at the top, right?
Yeah, and you can even argue that touching the dumbbells isn't even full range of motion, because you chose to touch them and not cross over the dumbbells, which would give you full range of motion,
correct,
but the opposite, but the opposite resistance on the joint, right? Because at that point you'll be working the other side of the axis, right? Yeah. So, yeah, it's funny how we see, you know, range of motion is kind of, it's so arbitrary, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's not full, because it's, you know, dumbbell bench press, but it's like you're not thinking about the joint, and you're not thinking about the resistance, as you mentioned, right? It's like there's no resistance up there, so why do we need to visit it? Mm-hmm. Maybe you want to, maybe you don't, mm-hmm. but yeah. And so these are kind of like the exercise rules that the industry try to make things simple for individuals to participate in, right?
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Wow, great conversation.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, good.
That
man.
Was a nice walk.
Yeah,
got a lot of sun.
Yeah, thank you for that. Where can people find you?
So my website is currently being reconstructed, but they can find me at Strategic Fitness. StrategicMuscleSystems.com, and they can find me at on Facebook, Dave Friday. Yeah, the website should be coming out, and
great.
You can. If you have any questions about what we talked about today, you can reach me on Facebook.
That's perfect. All right. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, man.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to Biceps and Banter with Brandon Crow. If you like our show, do us a huge subscribe, toss a review on iTunes, or maybe share the show with your friends. And if you want to know more, find us at fastingftw.com. Our Patreon is patreon.com/fastingftw.